Now, plants in our imaginations, I think, are gentle. They're nurturing. They bring shade. They bring beauty, colour, scent, food without consequence or moral overtone. But not all plants. There are thorns beneath the rose. Some plants harbour murderous intent. Now, Dan Torrey is a man who revels in this floral darkness. He's turned his attention to the confronting, brutal, the deadly world of the carnivorous plant. He's a senior lecturer in the School of Design at RMIT University and author of Carnivorous Plants. Dan, welcome.
Ah, thanks. Good to be here.
This is a tricky area because plants, as we say, have a generally good reputation.
That's right. That's right. Carnivorous plants are a really interesting grouping of plants. There's 600 or 700 of them, which is actually a fairly big number. And it surprises most people that there's so many carnivorous plants, plants that actually eat insects and small creatures. But there are quite a few out there. But when you think of the greater number of plants, there's about 400,000 species of plants. Mm. So they are a fairly elite group of carnivores.
So what happens in the evolution of a plant that it switches from drawing its nutrients from air and roots and soil and decides insects?
Yeah. Well, it has to do with the habitat that they're in. Most carnivorous plants actually grow in very nutrient-poor soil. So they struggle to find those nutrients in the soil. Mm. So they've sort of adapted very clever, intelligent ways to kind of snatch the nutrients out of the air, so to speak, by grabbing insects and digesting them.
Are we seeing now, and I wonder what the fossil record and so forth shows about this, are we seeing now the tail end of a...
Well, the problem with a lot of plants is the fossil records are a bit patchy. But there is certainly a gradation of carnivorous in plants. Mm. So there's some that are considered to be proto-carnivorous or partly carnivorous, and then there's some that are recognized as being definitely carnivorous that actually do completely rely on insects for their nutrients.
So one of those plants,
yeah,
entirely so, they will still be situated in soil. They'll still have a root system of sorts.
Yes, they do. So, I mean, I guess it's a bit of exaggeration. They probably do gather some nutrients from the soil, but very, very little. Of course, all plants photosynthesize, and that's how they create produce sugars and their energy to actually grow. But they also rely on a lot of other nutrients to develop and grow well, like potassium, nitrogen, things that we normally find in fertilizers that we fertilize plants with, and that are normally in the soil for most plants to access.
Many of those nutrients that we apply to plants are, of course, animal-based.
They are, yes. I mean, there's a popular fertilizer called blood and bone, which actually is derived
the origins of that.
From dead animals, right. And then, of course, a lot of fertilizers contain manure, which comes from animals. And so all plants in some way actually do consume creatures. And, when you think about it, most humans, when we're buried in the ground, in a way, perhaps end up being food for plants as well.
And all plants, too, have a relationship with the insect world, either yes, to attract them for pollination or to attract them for food.
Right. And then some have really interesting symbiotic relationships with insects where the insects actually help protect the plants from predators or herbivores that would normally eat the plants.
So let's take a typical carnivorous plant. I mean, is there such a thing, I guess? I mean, is there a particular system of predation and consumption which is universal across carnivorous plants?
The definition of a carnivorous plant is a plant that's able to attract, capture, digest, consume, and gain nutritional benefit from an insect or other creature. There's about three broad primary ways that these plants do that. There's the ones that are very active and they actually grab and trap the insects, like the Venus flytrap. They have the snapping trap that actually captures the insect. There's also some that have sort of a sucking trap that suck the insects in. So those are the active trap ones.
How do they suck the insects in?
Well, they're called bladderworts, or they're Utricularias is the grouping of plants. And they have these little bladder sacs attached underground, and they usually grow in water or very, very wet soil. And little creatures swim through, and they trigger these external hairs on this little bladder sac, and then it's a vacuum pressure in there with a trap door, and the trap door swings open and sucks the insect in, and then it starts to digest it once it's trapped.
What a very complex arrangement.
Yes, it's amazing how complex some of these apparatuses are. And then a second grouping is what we could call a pitcher plant or a pitfall trap. It's basically a modified leaf that has formed into sort of a pitcher or a receptacle that holds fluid, and basically the insect or creature will visit that, usually attracted by nectar that the leaf secretes. And it's very slippery on the edge, and it'll fall in and drown in the fluid and then get digested in the fluid and then absorbed into the plant.
So those plants, where some might create sap or whatever else flows through the limbs of plants, are creating some sort of chemical which can digest those creatures. Is that a fairly common thing across carnivorous plants?
Well, not necessarily. That is where the definition of carnivorous plants gets a little fuzzy. Most of them do, or quite a few of them do, secrete digestive enzymes, which are able to actually digest the insects. But quite a few actually rely on bacteria, resident bacteria that sits there that then kind of attacks the insect and breaks it down so that into elements that the plant can digest. Some plants actually employ insects to go around eating the smaller insects that are trapped in the traps and then sort of, you know, pooping them out onto the leaves of the plant so that the plants can then digest them. Then there's a third grouping, which are kind of the sticky flypaper type of traps. Sundews and lots of other plants secrete these very sticky droplets of stickiness. The insects are usually attracted by those. They think that they're little droplets of nectar or something, and they come and they get stuck and mired into this stickiness, and then the plant will start secreting the digestive enzymes to start digesting them right onto the leaves of those plants.
They have an extraordinary place in the human imagination.
They do.
Because there's something, I was going to say evil, but that's probably taking it a little bit too far. But
well, it's what I think is the most fascinating thing about this whole carnivorous plant area and topic is what happened when they first were proven to be carnivorous. These plants were known for, you know, centuries and centuries, and an important point occurred in the 1700s when the Venus flytrap was discovered in North America, and it was actually seen to be catching and trapping insects and killing them. But people couldn't just imagine that it was doing that to gain nutritional benefit. They couldn't imagine that it was actually eating them.
It's doing it out of spite.
Yeah, well, theories were put forward that perhaps these insects were doing it as a defensive mechanism. They were capturing the insects to prevent them from eating the plant itself. And so we went for about 100 years where there was a few people that would propose, well, you know, maybe they're eating these insects. And they would sort of be laughed at, or they, you know, think, oh, that's sort of a cute theory. Yes, that's clever, but obviously it's not true. Others would sort of get a little bit outraged, saying, well, there's no way that could happen because that goes against the sort of hierarchy of the way nature is set up. You know, humans at the top, then animals and plants at the very bottom. But then Charles Darwin went through an extensive 10-year study, and a few other scientists at the same time were also really heavily exploring these plants. And so in 1880, Charles Darwin published his book on insectivorous plants, and a few other people published papers at the same time. And it was suddenly, you know, pretty much proven that they were carnivorous and that they are actually eating insects. And then if you look at the literature, after that point, all of the nature writers and gardening writers suddenly turned on these plants, and they started using language like these plants are evil, they're wicked. It's so disgusting to watch them devour these poor, helpless insects. And so things just radically changed. It's so fascinating when you look at the literature. And it was also right at that time that Arthur Conan Doyle, who is better known for his stories on Sherlock Holmes, in 1881, I believe it was, he published a short story in a London magazine about an American that comes over from Arizona and visits a London gentleman's club and starts telling this tall tale, well, what he claims is absolutely true, of these giant carnivorous plants that were eating people down in Arizona. And the interesting thing is there's a scientist in the story, there's a scientist sitting at the same table, and he corroborates some of this information, you know, naming the Latin names of these plants. And so it seems very, very plausible. And in the end, everybody in this story, all the characters in the story believe it as being true. And so that was a really popular story, and that really set the whole genre of killer plant stories to follow.
From there we go to Little Shop of Horrors,
exactly.
To Day of the Triffids. And it's not such a huge leap of implausibility to imagine, because we change the nature of plants all the time. We breed plants for certain qualities. Why could we not breed a Venus flytrap that was of huge size that just coincidentally might, you know, seize on the leg of a passing human?
That's right. And a number of these stories actually do have this sort of, you know, mad botanist that develops this clever way of enlarging and making these plants more ferocious.
But they have beauty and they have elegance and they certainly have intricacy of design.
They do. And there's a number of people that really appreciate the beauty in these plants. Some of them are quite extraordinary, particularly some of these large pitcher plants. They're incredibly colorful and beautiful and really appreciated as garden plants and collecting plants.
Dan Torrey, his book is Carnivorous Plants. It's out. It's in shops. You'll find it. And this is Blueprint here on RN.